Hi there, my name is Jerem Bogwa, and I'm the host of Crime and Consequences Kenya, a true crime podcast where we tell the life stories of our victims, who they were, what happened to them, and why they still matter. Judge today are Judith Ekaliche Oure, the victim, and Daniel Anyango Omoyo, the murderer. Now, this story takes place in the new year of 2010, January 1st, the first day of that year. And Judith Ekaliche leaves her house at around 1 p.m. and she tells her mom that she's going to go to the market. And then after coming from the market, she's going to head to an M-Pesa shop to withdraw some money that she had. So it's unclear when, but as the story unfolds, we know that the first person that she meets that day is Daniel Anyango Omoyo, who is the accused in this story. So at around 2 p.m., they've been together for an hour. We can assume that they've probably gotten to the market at this time and they've done all the businesses that was taking them to the market. But Judith tells Daniel, hey, my boyfriend works at that place, so do you mind going and telling him that I'm calling him? So Daniel is like, yeah, sure. So he goes. The boyfriend is identified as Steven Nyangweso, aka Steve. So at about 2 p.m., Steve is working when Daniel comes and says, hey, there's a visitor calling you and they're waiting for you outside a place called Cosmos Bar. So Daniel doesn't tell Steve who the visitor is. So Steve leaves his workplace and goes to Cosmos Bar, and that's where he sees Judith standing outside of the bar. Then the two of them start talking and catching up. At around 3 p.m., the three of them are still together, Steve, Daniel, and Judith. They're still chatting, they're still doing whatever it is that they're doing that day when they meet Judith's sister-in-law, who was identified as Frida Atieno Ambaisi. And Frida is also on her way to the shopping center. Frida and Judith start to talk, and that is when Frida notices that Judith is with a boy that she didn't really know, but later was identified as Daniel. They met three times. So they met the first time when she was heading to the shopping center. They talked and then they parted ways. 10 minutes later, they came. Now, the second time, it's just Judith and Daniel who came and told Frida that they headed to a disco. Then they were left again. But that time, it's the three of them that came. It was Daniel, Judith, and Steve now. So at that time, Frida says that Judith and Steve stepped aside and started talking. And then the two of them parted ways. So Steve was like, I need to go. So he left. The people who are left, the remaining people who are left are just Judith, Daniel, and Frida. So after Judith and Frida finished talking, they parted ways again. And so the last person that Frida saw Judith with is Daniel. So when Steve leaves, he leaves and he heads to a place called Luanda Market with his brother-in-law. And he was going to buy beer because he had a bar. So he was going to buy some more beer for his bar business. Now, after that, it's now around 7 p.m. and a new player comes into the story, and she is identified as Mary Nyamwala Ougo. Now, Mary was Judith's mother. So remember, Judith left the house at 1 p.m. and it's now 7 p.m. So it's been 6 hours. So she decides to call Judith because it's probably getting a little dark and she's getting a little worried. So she tries to reach Judith by phone, but Judith does not answer the phone. The next day, Frida goes to Mary's house, which is where Judith lives, just to check if Judith got home safely. Because remember, Judith had told her that she and Daniel were headed to a disco. So when she goes to the house, Mary's mother is like, no, I actually tried to call her yesterday and I could not reach her, and she's not come home up until now. So after that, nobody hears or sees Judith again. So Judith has been missing since January 1st, okay? So now 5 days later, on January 6th of 2010, John Ambuka Amukoya was herding his cows when he smelled something very foul. It was like really, really bad. So he starts to investigate, trying to figure out where the smell is coming from, and that's when he discovers the body of a woman. So John immediately rushes back home and finds his wife. The wife was identified as Fanice Amboka, and he tells Fanice about what he's just discovered. Fanice is like, we have to tell somebody about this. So Fanice immediately goes to a village elder. The village elder was identified as Maurice Oyondi and tells him that, hey, my husband was herding the cows. He smelled something bad. He went to investigate. It was a body. Fanice and Maurice again go to the scene of the crime where the body was discovered, just so Maurice could confirm that it was indeed a body. So they go And then when they confirm that it's actually a human body, they go back and make a report at the chief's office. Now, according to Morris, this is going to be an important detail later. According to Morris, there were two things at the crime scene. There was the body of this woman who they did not know who it was at this time. And then a little distance from the body, there were clothes that did not look like they belonged to the woman. So there were some jeans and some shoes. So when Morris comes and says that it is actually a human body, the first place that they go is to the chief to report what they have found. The chief tells them, because this looks like a criminal matter, you have to go and report it to the police station. So they go to Kuisera police station and reported what they have found. One of the police officers who went to the crime scene and was later a witness for the prosecution in this case is referred to as Inspector Jackson Matheka. And he testified that two people came at around 1 p.m. on January 6th and reported that they found a body. So the police, of course, went to the scene where the body had been found. They took the body and they took it to Mbale Hospital mortuary. Now, it's important to note that the police did not put anywhere in their initial findings that they had seen any other thing apart from Judith's body. So the clothes that Morris had seen, the police did not see them when they went to collect the body. So, of course, now the police start to do the investigations, trying to figure out who this is, who this person who has been found is. So they eventually discover that the body is Judith, who had been missing since January 1st. And then when they start to conduct investigation on her final movements, it was reported that she was last seen at Emulwanda Market with Daniel. So remember I said that the first time that the police went to collect the body, they said that they did not see anything else apart from just the body. But the next day, because Maurice was very insistent that there were jeans and some shoes that don't look like they belong to a girl at that crime scene. So the next day the police go back and they found trousers, they found shoes, they found some hair, and they found a sweater. Now, from my investigations, if I can call them that, on this case, there's no confirmation on whether any of these items were ever tested for any DNA materials. So we don't really know what they did with these clothes and this hair that they found. On January 11th, a post-mortem on Judith's body is conducted by one Dr. Masika Collins. So he says that Judith's body had a visible cut wound on her right thigh, her right hand had been cut off, and there were bruises on her neck, and her private parts had been mutilated. So internally, her genital system had mutilation, and her private parts and cervical system also had injuries. In the doctor's opinion, the cause of death was respiratory arrest secondary to strangulation. So she had been strangled to death. This means that she had stopped breathing because her airway had been blocked. First, the investigators were looking at Steven, the boyfriend, as a primary suspect. But once Steven gave his statement and said that at around 3 p.m. is the last time that he had talked to Judith, and then immediately after that, he'd gotten into a car with his brother-in-law and they'd gone to Luanda to buy some beer for his business. And he did not see Judith or speak to her after January 1st, which I found a little weird. But then again, I don't want to be too judgmental of their relationship, but if you've not spoken to your girlfriend for 5 days, like that's a little... Then I'm also thinking maybe if the family had informed Steven that Judith had been missing from January 1st, that is maybe why he had not, because he said that he had not seen or spoken to Judith after he left Judith with Daniel on January 1st. Now, so the police are doing the investigations and they discovered that the last person that was seen with Judith is somebody called Daniel. So they, of course, go and look for Daniel. They discover that by January 2nd of 2010, Daniel had disappeared and he'd completely vanished. Nobody had seen him. From the last time that he was seen with Judith, nobody had seen him again. So Daniel was listed as the primary suspect of the crime. And again, there are really no reports on whether the police really did anything to try and find Daniel, because he was missing for quite a bit, because he left in 2010 and he would not be seen again until 2012. So that's 2 years that he had gone missing. Now, when police question Daniel's mother on his son's whereabouts, he says his mother was identified as Deborah Morika Omoro. His mother said that Daniel had gone home on January 1st at around 9 a.m. and he'd prepared some food for himself and his mother. And then shortly after that, according to Deborah, he said that he had left home and he'd gone to Nairobi to look for employment. So Daniel disappears. After Deborah's body is found, it's discovered that nobody has seen Daniel since that day. And nobody was going to see him again until 2012, when allegedly his mother called him and told him that he could come home and build his house in the family compound. So immediately Daniel gets home, he's arrested. He's arrested for the murder because remember that he was listed as a primary suspect of the crime. So immediately the police get reports that Daniel is back. He goes and he's arrested. Now, I don't know where this came from, but his mother said that she thought that he was arrested because he had been having a disagreement with some boy who had taken firewood from the family land. When more investigations were done on who this boy could have been, this boy turned out to be Steve. When further investigations were done, it was discovered that Daniel and Steve were actually somehow related by blood. So Daniel's older sister and Steve shared a father. So they had the same father, but different mother, but not Daniel and Steve directly. Daniel's older sister and Steve are the two that shared a father. So I'm guessing because of this, there had been some dispute over land and land ownership. Because remember, Deborah said that she called Daniel to come back home and build his house. But Steve allegedly did not want Daniel to build his house on the land that he had been given or that he felt was his. I really couldn't get a clear picture on where the land dispute was coming from. But according to Daniel and Deborah, there had been some dispute about land, about where Steve was supposed to be building his house. And this dispute had been primarily with Steve. So Daniel disappears in 2010. He comes back in 2012. He's immediately arrested. When he's questioned, he says that on January 1st of 2012, he was at home and he was preparing to build his house and preparing to plant some maize on his shamba. So he goes, he plants his maize, and then he tells his mom that, you know what, because of all this dispute and it's very unclear if I can build my house right now, I'm just going to go to Nairobi and I'm going to look for some work. And so he left the village and he went to Nairobi. And he did not come back until his mother called him and told him that, hey, you can now come back and start building your house. So when Daniel was asked about Judith, do you know Judith? People were saying that you're the last person who was seen with Judith. He completely denied knowing that Judith was dead or even knowing who Judith was. He was like, I don't know who that girl is. I didn't even know she was dead. Me leaving had nothing to do with her because I don't even know who you're talking about. He also refuted the claim that he had run away to Nairobi after her death. And he completely denied. Remember, Frida says that she saw Daniel with Judith. Steve says that he saw Daniel with Judith. But Daniel says that they're both lying. Steve did not leave me with Judith, and I don't even know who this Judith is, so there's no way that I could have killed her. And so remember, when the village elder went to the crime scene and saw the body, he says that he saw some jeans and some shoes which don't look like they belonged to a woman. They look like men's shoes. So when the police went the next day, they also found these alleged clothes and they took them in as evidence. So these clothes were said to have belonged to Daniel. But Daniel completely also refused that the clothes found at the crime scene were his. He said, those are not my clothes. How can they be my clothes when I don't know who you're talking about? I didn't know anybody had died. Like, I have nothing to do with this. And everybody who says that they saw me with this girl is lying because I don't even know who this girl is. When Daniel was asked about Frida, according to court documents, he denied. But at the same time, he admitted to knowing who Frida was. Remember, Frida was Judith's sister-in-law. And she was one of the key witnesses because her testimony placed Daniel with Judith around the time when she had gone missing. And again, he's denying that I was not with these people. Steve did not leave me with this woman. I don't know who this woman is. But when he's asked about Frida, he's like, I don't know her, but I kind of know her. So he was denying and admitting to knowing her at the same time. Now, Daniel's lawyer, one Mr. Osando, said when he was giving now the defense for Daniel, he said that the state had failed to prove the allegations of murder against Daniel because everything that they were hearing was just hearsay. It was speculation. There was no hard evidence. There was nothing to connect Daniel to this crime apart from what other people were saying. He also noted that it was very strange that the police did not see the clothes that these other people said they had seen at the crime scene the first time and had to go back up again the next day. And this is when they found all these things that allegedly had been there from the start. Mr. Osando also said that the police had failed to do proper investigations because A, there were no photographs of the crime scene that had been taken by the police at that time. And number two, he said that they did not do enough investigation on Stephen, who was Judith's boyfriend at this time. So according to him, Stephen should have also been charged because he was also among the last people to be seen with Judith. Now, when the prosecution was making their case, all they had to rely on was the eyewitness because, as I said, I don't think that there was any DNA done on the clothes, any DNA analysis. There was no DNA analysis done on the items that were found at the crime scene. So the only thing that the state had to go on was the eyewitnesses. So the prosecution really, really insisted that multiple people say that they saw you with Judith on the last day that she was seen alive. So that has to mean that you are guilty. Also, the fact that you ran away for 2 whole years from immediately the day she died and then you came back 2 years later, that also is painting you to be very, very guilty. So that was the prosecution's whole argument, is that there are eyewitnesses and also your behavior after this crime had happened is very, very suspicious. So this case was presided over by High Court Judge Ruth N. Sitati, who said that the prosecution needed to prove whether Daniel had directly or indirectly caused the death of Judith and whether he had malice afterthought. She said that the prosecution did not have any direct evidence that Daniel had done the crime. It was all circumstantial. It was people saying that they had seen him. So it was all based on circumstances. There was no hard evidence. There was no DNA connecting him to the crime. There was nobody who saw him actually doing the crime. It was just all circumstantial evidence. So this is a direct quote from her. She says, "Does the said circumstantial evidence form an unbroken chain with no possibility that the culprit could be someone other than the accused? When the circumstantial evidence is good, it is often the best evidence." So this basically means the judge was saying, even if you don't have any hard evidence linking him to the crime, if the circumstantial evidence that you have is giving us a chain of events that look accurate, then often that is... It's going to work. You then probably don't need to have the DNA analysis or anything else. So according to Judge Ruth, she said that the witnesses placed Judith with Daniel on the last day that Judith was seen alive. And immediately after that, he went missing, which was very, very weird. So this is a direct quote from her. She says that from January 1st, 2010, at about 3 p.m. until he was arrested on August 1st, 2012, the accused was never seen in the area. It is my considered view that the accused person is the only one who knows what happened to the deceased between the time he was with her on January 1st, 2010, until her body was discovered on January 6th, 2010, in a semi-decomposed state. She added that she was very satisfied with the circumstantial evidence presented against Daniel and that his alibi felt more like an afterthought. It didn't feel like this is what I understood. I feel like she didn't feel like Daniel put much effort into the alibi. It just felt like he just thought of, what can I say to get me out of this? And the first thing that popped in his brain is what he said. So given the nature of her death and the state in which her body was found, the judge was convinced that Daniel was guilty of murder and malice afterthought. So on 29th September 2015, Daniel was found guilty for the murder of Judith and sentenced to death. Now, 4 years later, on October 31st, 2019, he tried to appeal his sentence, but his appeal was rejected and the sentence was upheld. And that is the story of Judith Ekaliche Ored. So if you've gotten to this part, thank you so much for listening to me. If you want to support the show, you can do that by following me on Spotify. Just click that couple of thing and follow. You can give me 5 stars if you think that I did a good job. That goes a long way in helping Spotify push my content further. You can also follow me on Instagram and TikTok, FremonConsKE. I try and do small snippets of videos of the cases that I've covered in length here on Spotify. So if you go to FremonConsKE on TikTok and Instagram, you're going to find me there. I hope you have a very good Wednesday, and I will see you next time. Bye.